I'm Ryan Dombrowski.
I'm the Ninja Fat Man from Doom Ninja Podcast,
a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to the Starling Tribune. I am, in fact, not Stargate Pioneer, so if you call me SP, I will be mildly, maybe even greatly offended, so please do not try it. But your reporters for this episode 8 of season 5 of the Starling Tribune are Neil.
It's a little alien, a little Star Trek, J.J. Abrams style, and a whole lot of tech.
Michelle.
Nice clothes. Shop in an alien Gap?
And I'm Chris, and I want to quote, so I'm going to say, it will probably help more than you pretending to be Oliver Queen. This podcast is recorded live on Thursday, December 1st, 2016, over on Geeks.live. It is the end of the invasion.
Ooh.
Now, we are just a bunch of comic book geeks and Arrow enthusiasts and DC TV enthusiasts. We like to talk about comics, though, don't we, Neil?
Can I say I'm a comics guy? Because I didn't read Invasion. I'm so bad.
I'm not going to tell anyone. Well, you just told the internet you didn't read it.
Well, you know, I read Invasion, so you didn't have to.
Yay! Thanks, Michelle.
You're welcome.
Neil, you want to know a secret?
Go ahead. Hit me up.
I, too, did not read Invasion, so I suck.
We just joined you on camera, too, for that. That's pretty impressive.
Wow!
Yeah, we've got two cameras running tonight, but I was playing with it this week. But hey, none of that matters. People that are listening to the podcast or watching live, like, I don't care about this live camera stuff. They want to know what's going on this week on the Starling Tribune, so maybe we should give them a little bit of warning on spoilers.
Sure thing. Well, tonight we'll be discussing this week's episode of Arrow, as well as Supergirl, Flash, and Legends of Tomorrow on the four-way Heroes vs. Aliens Invasion crossover, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could impact future episodes of Arrow, as well as Flash, Supergirl, and Legends of Tomorrow.
He means four-way, and anyone watching video, I'm holding up three fingers, and we'll explain that later, that little comment. Just a reminder, we have a lot of speculation and theories that we throw out in this show. It includes a lot of information the showrunners and the actors have shared in cons and interviews and things like that. So be warned that even though we're throwing out wild speculation, sometimes we might accidentally be right. So that's a spoiler warning right there.
And speaking of spoilers, sometimes we geek out and we talk about this week's DC Comics. So every once in a while, there could be a comic book spoiler, but we promise we'll try our best not to ruin anything major for you.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. If you like our content, why don't you swing by our podcast network home at GunnaGeek.com, where you can find all of our past shows, plus a ton of other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles, all under the Gunna Geek Productions banner. So why don't we go ahead and get started? So go ahead, Neil, and break down the current episode for us.
Thanks, Michelle. This week, the episode title is Invasion, Season 5, Episode 8. And just in case you've been keeping track, episode 100 of Arrow. Air date, Wednesday, November 30th, 2016. Directed by James Bam Bam Bamford. We've talked about Bam Bam before. He started his career as the fight choreographer and a stuntman for Arrow. And now here he is directing episode 100. And you'll remember he directed episodes 1 and 2 this season as well. He's even directed an episode of Supergirl now, which is pretty darn cool. The writers for this week, they broke out the big guns. Mark Guggenheim himself with the teleplay, one of the creators and showrunners for this show. The co-executive producers, Wendy Miracle and Greg Berlanti, also helped with the teleplay and the story. And if you're a fan of this show or anything in the Berlantiverse, all those names are really familiar to you.
Yeah, they really are. Like Neil said, it's the big guns. Why don't we drop everything? Let's get into this episode. Hey guys, with a title like Invasion, I have no idea what the theme is, do you?
I guess maybe aliens?
What?
Just maybe.
Just maybe.
Yeah, there may have been one or two trailers, one or two promo shots, you know.
So now I call this part two of the crossover. Gentlemen, agree?
So we did tease we would touch on that. I have to agree with Michelle. This is, in fact, part two of the crossover to me as well, because we're going to talk about the other shows a little bit. If you watched Supergirl, you probably felt a little ripped off. I will say in my household, for instance, I watch Supergirl on a regular basis. However, my girlfriend does not. So she's like, I guess I have to watch Supergirl. And 50 minutes into it, she goes, I have no idea what any of this stuff is. Where's the crossover? And then Barry and Cisco show up and she goes, you mean all I had to do is watch the last 5 minutes of the show? I have to watch the rest of the crap? And I went, well, at least it's partly a crossover. And then what happened the next night when we watched Flash, guys?
It was the same exact material from Supergirl. Yeah. We're not the only ones. You know, I've actually remember us talking about the crossover, and we would talk about how, you know, it's supposed to just start in Supergirl a little bit.
It was a little bit.
Yeah, like just they kept saying it's supposed to be three main parts, but then somebody at the CW was like, oh, wait, but Supergirl's in there, so we're going to call it four nights. And they made it big, and people were like, why do I have to watch Supergirl?
Because Supergirl. That's why.
I know. I'm really glad people watched it.
Supergirl is a great show, and they really tried hard. And let's face it, she is in a different universe. Starting the crossover, I mean, they could have made it work, but there were a whole bunch of storylines that were in play with Supergirl. There was no way they could have dropped everything, dropped the Cadmus storyline, the White Martian storyline, the Cyborg Superman storyline, and just, oh, okay, let's just take her out of it for a bit. I mean, I'm sure they could have written something, but it wouldn't have been a natural break.
So here's the thing. It was a good episode of Supergirl. If you've been watching it, you're like, oh, this is awesome. We're tying up all sorts of plot threads. But if you're someone who's been watching these promos and goes, oh, part one of this crossover starts here. I don't watch Supergirl. I guess I should check it out. You came in and you're lost, and it potentially turned you off because you're going, what the hell is going on? I don't understand. Why are you doing this to me? And it felt kind of just tacked on as a, hey, come watch Supergirl too. And I'm not saying there was some plot or anything to do that, but hey, Supergirl did get a nice ratings increase, which we'll talk about in the news, in part because of this invasion piece. And I'm a little miffed, I'll be honest.
I know, as a Supergirl fan, I live tweet Supergirl. So like for us, we're like, oh, wow, this, oh, wow, that is Lena. No, she double-crossed, and then Maggie and Alex, and it was like, oh, she kissed, and everybody on Twitter is like, I have no idea, who are these people? Why are you guys so happy about this kiss? Why is this important? I just came for a crossover.
We have house guests right now, and I was like, okay, guys, this is going to be awesome. It's an aliens versus superheroes. It's part one of a four-part crossover. You're going to see all these superheroes. So they sat down, they're like, who's that girl? Why is it a big deal they kissed? Why are there two versions of that black guy, and why is he kind of cyborg in one of them? Whose mom is that? Does she like her mom? What's going on? Why are they blowing up a bar? And they were just, it was beat after beat where I just had to pause it, walk them through the last season of Supergirl in some cases, then hit play again. And then at the end, I'm like, oh, here you go. You see, I promised more superheroes. That guy in red, he's another superhero. And it's over.
Yeah, so there's very little there. Suncast said it's basically a cameo is what he's saying in the chat room, and I don't disagree with him on that. Now, they did do a little bit of planning to do it, at least, because you had moments where little portals were opening throughout the episode. So they had planned for some element there. It's not like they just tacked on a scene from Flash into the end of Supergirl, even though that's kind of what it felt like. But I digress. It was okay. It was okay. Hopefully it didn't turn too many people off in the long run and be like, oh, the hell with Invasion. And actually, I guess we can be pretty sure it didn't do that, considering all the ratings were up across the board.
Yeah. So the part one would be Flash.
Yes.
They finally got Kara there, and they got everybody together to fight each other.
It's like they watched Civil War before they made this.
Or Batman v Superman. Or any other superhero movie in which you have groups of superheroes. But you know what? They kept it short. Yeah, I got to give them credit for that.
That's true. So, because it starts off, there's the Dominators, and Barry go gets Kara because Supergirl's an alien. And so they figure alien versus an alien. Then they get together in the Hall of Justice.
Star Labs Hall.
It's Star Labs.
Hall of some kind. It sure as hell is the Hall of Justice.
Did you guys squee? I squeed.
I squeed.
A little bit.
I did. I really like how Barry tried to lead.
Do we just pretend he's not saying anything?
Yeah, it was entertaining. We all knew Oliver was going to be more active as leader than even he wanted to be in that, because that's how Oliver works in season 5, is he kind of doesn't want to be leader and then does it because he has no choice.
But Bat Checklist, here's our callback. The unpowered guy with gadgets is the tactician and the de facto mastermind of the team. So I think we're bringing back the Bat Checklist. Ollie was the tactician.
It's true. So Flash did set up a lot of things. It pretty much, like we talked about, had our local heroes, they get brainwashed, and it comes down to Ollie and Barry to fight them off. It's the original crossover fighting the secondary crossover folks you get later, for lack of a better term, which is not meant to be disparaging, but I realize kind of did sound disparaging. So sorry, guys. You're not the B team, I swear.
Well, you know, Barry did use his wits, and he got Supergirl mad and got her to do the machine. That was cool.
Vibe threw himself, which was pretty cool, actually. Is that the first time we've seen a living being pass through Barry?
Like that, yes.
I think so.
Because that's a full body phase.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool.
Well, and from a Flash standpoint, I know we are not a Flash podcast. I do want to bring up this point from Flash. I did like seeing Wally get involved in things. He's kind of annoying how much he was pushing to get involved in things, but hey, Kid Flash is going to happen eventually. I was worried they were just going to be like, oh, Wally's on the sidelines and he's just not going to do anything. No, Wally took himself off the sidelines, saved the day, and then got his butt kicked to get him out of the rest of the crossover. So they did it in a smart way, I guess, to get rid of him.
That's true. And if some of you are like going, how did Wally get powers? Well, as the crossover like to remind us, for all like the three main parts, everything is Barry's fault. We have Flashpoint. Barry went back in time.
Oh, and Stein's fault.
Yes, and Stein's fault.
Well, no. We'll talk about Stein in a moment. So Barry went in time because he missed Mommy and Daddy, and then created a timeline, went back, fixed it. Now everything's all changed. And Cisco's brother died because of Flashpoint. And Barry also erased Sarah. But boy, they hit that home with the crossover. Like, if you were not watching Flash, you're just like, wow, they are beating up on this Barry guy.
Yeah. And Ollie is the master of beating himself up. You know, he's like, wow, you guys are all really I've been there and I've beat myself up. I like how he's kind of being the big brother to Barry and kind of saying, listen, I would have done the same thing. I would have screwed up too. We're human. I get it. We're going to move on. We're going to deal with this. It was a really great dynamic between those two characters, and kudos to Stephen Amell. I think he played it incredibly well. I think one thing that happened in this crossover, I think a lot of these guys really upped their game, and, you know, I'm not hard on these actors because I enjoy the show and I think they're great actors, but they definitely stepped it up this week, and, you know, kudos to everybody.
So before we start deep diving into Arrow itself, there are a couple comments coming in the chat room. Big Pop himself, Stephen Jondrus, popped in and said he was kind of disappointed with this crossover. It's kind of a failure to him. He hasn't seen Legends yet, but to this point, it doesn't really seem like it all paid off. And SP's bringing up a point. He goes, you had 4 DC TV shows get together. Guys, this will never happen again. Enjoy it. Well, really, we only had 3. I'm being snarky. I'm sorry.
I think at the end, we're going to have to discuss, because I wanted, you know, let's talk through the whole thing about whether or not how successful this was. But yeah, so, but I liked the episode Flash. I did. I thought that was, you know, cool to see everybody. I loved Supergirl's introduction. You know, okay, Ollie, Green Arrow, Diggle, Spartan. You know, that was nice. That was really cool.
And some of the heroic poses in tonight's Legends of Tomorrow episode were fantastic. It was truly heroic. When we're all done talking about this, I'm going to ask you guys to rank them in the order of your favorite crossover episodes. I'm going to include Supergirl. Yes, all four of them, Chris.
Well, I already know my least favorite then. It's not a shot at Supergirl. It's just a shot at the way the crossover was done. Please, please don't take anything I'm saying here as me being negative towards it. This was a spectacle I don't think we'll see again anytime soon. And I enjoyed the ever-living hell out of it. I was sitting there, I was like, this is so much fun. I'm geeking out. But I think there were flaws in a few places, and that's going to happen in any kind of television program. And when you're trying to cross over four programs, you're going to have some flaws. And that's not bad. It's just noticeable. And I'm a nitpicker, guys.
So Flash ends with five of our heroes getting abducted. And this is where Arrow starts, because the ones who are taken are Ollie, Sarah, Thea, Ray, and Diggle. So they're taken up in the ship. And then we get the 100th episode of Arrow.
The This Is Your Life segment, basically.
No, this is the whole, like, path not taken trope.
Robert Frost.
Yeah. And listen, the other two shows have kind of had this. Actually, all three of the other shows have had this. We had the For the Girl Who Has Everything Starro episode in Supergirl. We had Flashpoint for Barry. And we've even had the 50s episode with Ray in Legends last season. So it was just about time for Arrow to have one of these, if you think about it that way.
Yeah, and the 100th episode was a good landmark to do it with, too, because it kind of gave you a chance to pause and make, well, this is everything that could have happened. And I know some people felt that this didn't really fit in with the crossover. I kind of liked it. It was a nice pause on things to kind of reset, regather yourself, and then in the back half of this episode, continue the invasion arc of things. I enjoyed that aspect of it. Maybe that's because I'm more partial to Arrow than some people are that are watching the crossover. They're more partial to Flash, for instance. So I think it might just depend on what your favorite program is on it. I don't know.
I like the fact that we got more of Team Arrow without Ollie. We got to see how they're operating, minus Artemis.
Yeah, unless you're Artemis. I guess I saw an interview with Mark Guggenheim somewhere. It's like, her mom was sick, or it was her mom's birthday or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's just forget that. And let's just forget Thea and Legends, but we'll get to Legends after we really go into Arrow. So do we want to start with the flashback? Do we want to start with the fighting, the present? Where do we want to start, gentlemen?
Let's start fights. We always start fights. Let's not break a good thing here.
Stick with the formula.
Yeah. It either works or we're just not very creative, one of the two.
Next question. Do we want to start with the, okay, or do we want to start with the fight?
Let's start with the fight.
Best fight ever or best fight ever?
Let's go with the second one.
Yeah, I'll go with number two.
Oh my God, I loved it. Deathstroke, Malcolm Merlyn, Damian Dark, and some henchmen.
It was so cool. And we'd seen from the promo shots that we knew they were going to trot out Deathstroke. And we got Deathstroke multiple times. And we got to relive, you know, a katana through the chest, but kind of different this time, which was awesome. But Ollie v. Deathstroke, Sarah versus Damian Dark, Thea versus Daddy, Malcolm Merlyn himself. And I will go further to say that it wasn't Diggle versus a henchman. I think that was supposed to be Andy because it was a ghost. Just like Deathstroke didn't pull his mask up, that could have been Andy. And remember, Ray was fighting a Mirakuru soldier. And that was how his fiance was supposed to die, with one of the Mirakuru guys.
Right.
So this had real deep connection to each of these characters.
I had the same note on it potentially being Andy beneath that mask. It was probably just a matter of, we can't get the actor back, so let's just make him be a ghost, because he was a ghost. Really, my only quibble with this is I wish they could have gotten Manu Bennett back or reused some of his lines from season two and played them in there, because it doesn't quite seem like Slade without him taunting Oliver a little bit. Because throughout season two, anytime they fought, Slade was taunting him because he knew he had the upper hand.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
And we all knew Manu Bennett wasn't going to be on it because he quite vocally expressed his opinion on last season on Twitter. And it probably did not go over well with the showrunners, the producers, the network, hell, most people who are involved with the current program.
I know. If you ever want to know what it looks like when somebody burns bridges.
He burnt the village around the bridges, too.
Yeah. I don't think he's coming back, which is a real shame, but there's other villains. We just got to find them.
Yes. But we got two fights with Deathstroke in it, which I thought was really fun because, hey, I'm a Deathstroke mark. I have been for a long time. And the first one that was Diggle and Ollie versus Deathstroke, that was kind of fun to see Diggle getting in on the fight with him because I don't recall him actually getting into a fist fight with Slade in season two when Slade was in costume. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not remembering. If I'm misremembering, please feel free to send me a tweet or a Facebook message or whatnot, or just call me a moron on the internet like a lot of other people do. It's fine. I'll take it.
That's at the Chris Farrell. I wouldn't do that.
At the Chris Farrell, you're an idiot. Please feel free to send that to me. And any hate mail you want to send, please send to js@gunnageek.com. He is our acceptor of hate mail for everyone on the network. And I'm sure I'm missing some of the other fights. Someone save me here. I'm still geeking out over Deathstroke.
Michelle, you had a great note in the show notes saying where Thea stabs Malcolm, fires the arrow at Sarah, who catches it, stabs Dark, tosses the bow to Ollie. Ollie shoots Deathstroke, arrow. It's just like boom, 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 boom. You can tell this was a Bam Bam Bamford scene. It was fight heavy, beautiful choreography, and working the camera angles between all the different characters. It was a work of art.
Well, I also like that Deathstroke took it in the empty eye socket again, too. I was like, just keep it going. Do it again.
I have to admit, I really enjoyed the Thea Malcolm fight because, boy, that was really beautifully brutal. Like, she was just like really getting into that and everything. It was some nice kicks in there and everything. And I liked how she dealt with her fight first. You know, like she was. Thea was thinking about staying in the dream because she didn't want to lose her family again. And then she comes back out saying, you know, you are my family. I don't want to lose you. Definitely. And then for her to like be the first one to like win her fight, I thought that was really cool.
Might help her kill some of her real life demons too, in regards to her father constantly being so weird and unpredictable. And he loves his daughter, but then he doesn't because it's convenient for his plots. Not like plot reasons, but because of the plots that he's making. That's what I was
meaning. Yeah, exactly. You know, before we get to the other main fights in this episode, though, speaking of beautiful fight choreography, going back to the night before his flash, though, and the backlit scene in the bottom of Star Labs between Ollie and Sarah, God, that was a gorgeous piece of choreography and fight filming and shot beautifully, lit really well. It's like, wow, that's going to stick out in my memory for a while.
Yeah, I think some Arrow people probably went over and helped with that because Flash doesn't have that ground hand-to-hand combat because Barry's all whoop-whoop-whoop-whoop type of deal. So I think that's where they were like, let's call in some Arrow people to do that.
My headcanon is that they loaned them Bamford for that. They got Bam Bam to go and do it. That's my headcanon. I don't know if it's accurate or not, but I'm going to stick with it.
Headcanon accepted.
Yeah, see, exactly.
I'm with you on that one. So the other big fight in Arrow, though, was Wild Dog versus Cyberwoman, followed with Barry and Kara just kind of beating up on Cyberwoman for a while, which seemed a bit unfair.
I kind of wanted the Darth Vader line of all too easy when it was said and done, because they kind of just, she was chump change against them.
I know those two in there. It was kind of odd, just kind of like they were just kind of like really in the background. Everybody was kind of fawning over them except for Wild Dog, and Curtis was just literally squeeing and being the ultimate fan and enjoying, you know, getting that ride from Barry.
Phrasing? Are we doing that still?
Yeah, we probably should.
Lana!
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No.
Yeah, that fight, I mean, okay, it does set up potentially Cyborg in this universe really nicely. But yeah, it just kind of felt like, why did you let Renee go after her to begin with when the two of you could have just beat her up?
So that he could have a role in the crossover.
Oh, and to make him realize that aliens and metas are cool?
And he resolved his issues around metas in the end.
In like 30 seconds.
Yeah, it was quick resolution.
Okay, I'm down with that.
Headcanon accepted.
Hey. We had some Dominators in this episode and the episode before and some alien spaceships. Damn, lots of Dominators.
Yeah, it was cool.
I really like the CGI. Again, people online are like, it's TV CGI, but no, this worked for me, especially in like the brighter scenes in Flash and Legends. I was all over this.
they used their money well to make them scary. They did look awful. The teeth and the teeth and the teeth.
And the red forehead. Don't forget the red forehead. That's a classic comic book,
the teeth.
Design.
Their appearance reminded me of Species 8471 from Voyager for some reason.
Ooh, yeah.
I was like, oh, they kind of look like them. Now, obviously, 8471 had no mouths. I think they were four-legged. But, like, the rough outline and the appearance of the head and the torso, I was like, oh, man. It just made me feel like there was a similarity there. And I think it tapped into just how creeped out I was by those aliens on Star Trek back then, too.
Yeah. For those of you who, because this is actually based off of comic book, this is from DC comic book story. They have the teeth too. So the teeth from the comic book is actually, I actually would say it's scarier on the television because they were just able to really get in there and make it 3D and the whole deal. And yeah, those teeth. Good job.
Well done, guys. I approve.
I do too.
And I love the team members from Arrow and Flash every time they're exposed to something new. I mean, this, mainly with Arrow, this isn't Legends where they're on a spaceship tripping through time. This isn't Supergirl where you have the DEO and lots of aliens sitting, at a dive bar. It's not even the Flash where it's, meta of the week. They're crossing dimensions. A lot of the times for our crew, this is Arrow. These are the street level heroes and they're having a hard time dealing with spaceships and time travel and aliens and everything compounding. It adds a nice bit of reality, and it kind of, we've talked about this before, it's almost as if they're representing you, the person that would have a hard time with this.
I could see it. Works for me.
Yeah, it's like Renee and even Oliver tonight, like, represent those who are like, wow, this is too much. And then you've got the nerd army / tech support who is like completely geeking out over everything, which is like me. I'll be like, oh my God, you're Supergirl! Oh, I would be Felicity. Best team up ever. That would be me.
The quote from tonight, somebody call tech support.
I love it.
So now we talked about this briefly. This is episode 100. So whereas we normally talk about flashbacks, we could really consider the majority of this episode kind of one big alt reality flashback in some cases. And we saw a lot of characters that we haven't seen in a long time. It was good to see some of these characters back, and there were some conspicuous absences, but Chris, let's talk about the elephant in the room, Laurel.
She is my favorite character. I love Laurel.
How do you like her in this 100 episode?
Well, she's less whiny and annoying, so she's all right.
If that's the best we're going to get, Chris, I'll take it, but I really appreciated having Laurel back in this episode. I think seeing how those two would have evolved as characters if the whole Queen's Gambit hadn't happened, I really appreciate it. It's kind of some of the closure that we didn't get at the end of last season when Laurel was taken out of the show. And I thought it was really good to have Kitty Cassidy back.
In all seriousness, it's nice to see them all being happy. All of those characters, Robert, Moira, Oliver, Thea, Laurel and Sarah, all of those people being happy, it's nice to see because they've been put through the ringer over 5 seasons and some of them are dead.
I love seeing Sarah and Laurel together. The Lance sisters, just what could have been, I really enjoyed them together. It's like, oh, why couldn't they just be like canaries together or something?
Oh, the yin and the yang of the canaries. That would be a cool team up. And I know one of SP's favorite characters made a comeback. And since he's not here, we can talk about how it was awesome to have Moira back. I mean, she, as far as SP is probably concerned, they could bring her back as a recurring character, grab the Earth 2 Moira and bring her back. I'm sure that would go over well with SP.
But she wasn't evil. I really wanted her to be evil because evil Moira was so fun. Or let me rephrase, scheming Moira was more fun.
Yeah. Daddy is going to be mayor, though, so maybe she was scheming to make that happen?
That's true. And the thing I was wondering in this Elseworld is Malcolm still Thea's dad?
He would have to be.
Huh?
Because it's Thea. We are the unique combination of a particular sperm and a particular egg. So Thea is Malcolm and Moira's kid.
This is her dream world. Everything is perfect for them. Would she still be Malcolm's kid in her dream world, or would she be Robert's biological?
She might be, but she doesn't acknowledge that. She still treats, you know, Big Daddy Queen as her dad. She can live in that dream world.
No, that's fair. I like that take.
Well, also in here, remember when Laurel says to Sarah, I thought maybe you would have hooked up with Oliver. And then she says, but I'm in the girls. Like, so in this alt reality, Sarah was always into girls and the whole affair with Oliver never happened.
And then you get that nice line when she's talking to Ray and Laurel goes, are you sure you're still into girls? Or something like that, which was just fun.
Oh, Sarah seeing Kara the first time thinking she's hot.
It's nothing we all didn't think ourselves. Hell, even Jeb Bush said so. It's true.
Oh, so it was fun. I liked the wedding scene. Hey, we got another party at the Queen Mansion. We haven't had a party at the Queen Mansion in a long time. I kind of missed that. It was a nice callback.
Yeah, I'm like, it's the mansion. Yay. So it was good to see them. What do we think of Diggle as the Hood?
I called it. When we first saw him, I was like, oh, it's got to be Diggle. I don't know who else it would be. I mean, not that I get any great kudos for that, because I'm sure 90% of the viewers did, but I like being right occasionally.
I like how Ollie could break into the Arrow Cave, and it has bad security in this alt reality as well.
Everyone can break into the Arrow Cave. It's just that's canon everywhere. Is up. There's a cave here. Let's go in. I was kind of hoping that the Arrow Cave would revert back to what it had been in season one of Arrow, so beneath the foundry or whatnot. That would have been cool to me to see that old scene again.
We got the fern.
Yeah, we did. The fern was still there.
Oh, we got another callback to Verdant as well. That was, that made me happy.
Yeah, Thea's running that club, so yeah.
And it's interesting because they were pulling their happy places from their memories. So for Thea, that's when she was happy. That was before she was Speedy, when she was together with Roy Harper. She had responsibility. She was also hooking up with DJ Ninja. Yeah, that's her happy place, and I can see that.
I think the happy place was before DJ Ninja. I think it was, she would be with Roy. That's my headcanon, and I'm accepting it.
I wish we had real Roy in here versus odd CGI-looking Roy at the end.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about a couple other things in here, though, that I had notes on. Quentin Lance, how interesting was to see him happy again and not just messed up? I was like, wait a second. Quentin's a functional human being, and he's smiling and making jokes? What the hell?
And he should have been married. I wanted Alex Kingston.
Aww.
The budget was already up for this crossover. They couldn't afford much more.
Oh, but come on. We missed, because we've never seen her with both kids, have we?
Very briefly, I think.
Yeah, I think briefly, but yeah.
A mother of the bride moment? Oh, killing me.
I'm not sure how they could have fitted in very well, though. There's so much stuff. This was jam-packed.
Speaking of jam-packed, again, Felicity and her nerd army. It's been a theme throughout this entire crossover. Felicity and Cisco and Mr. Terrific, you know, Curtis. I just think it's a great combination. And you throw in the rest of the team, and it's a thing of beauty. We talked about Curtis a bit, you know, and again, yeah, I love the fact that, did Cisco say it in this one or a different one? Or he's like, oh, your tech guy quotes movies too. How original.
This one. It was an Arrow.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. And as you have in the show notes, Michelle, happy to be hacking the alien tech. It's kind of a dream come true for him.
Yeah, only he would be like, we have aliens and it's... They're space monsters, but still it's alien tech and we get to hack everything and whee! It's like, all right. I can understand though. I can understand Curtis though.
Now, how much of the alien tech is going to be left? Like how many bits of it is Cisco or Curtis or Felicity going to start incorporating in their toys? That would be awesome.
Oh, they have that thing left.
The communicator thing, but
they'll find something to do with it, then.
Yeah, there's got to be bits. And maybe it's like in those flat or those S.H.I.E.L.D. one-shots where people are finding bits of alien tech after the invasion.
True.
That could be.
Not to cross the streams, but I'm crossing the streams.
You crossed them just a little bit there.
Yeah.
Let's see. Who else can we talk about from the team over there? Wild Dog, we talked about him earlier, kind of having his realization that metas aren't all bad, and I'm sure someone on the show was happy with his salmon ladder performance. Neil, how'd you feel about his salmon ladder performance?
Was he doing the salmon ladder? I don't know.
Oh, my goodness, he was. He was shirtless. Sorry to interrupt you there, Neil. I just, you know.
Yeah, no worries. No, Chris, that wasn't targeted at me, was it?
No, of course not.
Yeah, so, yeah, Wild Dog there showing everybody how it's done. Not as good as Oliver. Nope, but he's got some skills.
He does. He didn't do too bad. He did better than Curtis did on the salmon ladder.
Do you think we're going to see Curtis do the salmon ladder by the end of the season? Do you think he'll get there?
Season finale, he's going to get it there, and then they'll kill him. No, I don't know.
You're cold. This got really dark really quickly.
Woo! Wow. Let's talk about some more of the Team Arrow there. Ragman, he thinks everything here is a divine plan and kind of is able to spin it into aliens being God's plan, which was interesting.
Yep. The Old Testament Hebrew thing. Sure. Okay.
We got to fit him in there somewhere because...
I was just happy he got to be on there. And it was interesting from my standpoint because girlfriend didn't know who he was. So she's like, who was that? I was like, oh, that's Ragman. She goes, he sounds weird.
And I have to admit, he was all like, kind of like cool about everything. Like he was just like, all right, we gotta have aliens.
He's the only one with like centuries old magical vestments, though.
That's true.
Yeah, he's got a bit more weird in his life than the rest of Team Arrow.
That's true.
So who are we missing this week? There was nothing Prometheus. I don't think we can change any of our leads around, really, because there were no hints as to Prometheus' identity. We did see, if you saw the previews for next week, it's Prometheus heavy next week. So maybe we'll get a better idea and can theorize better. So I think we can skip over Prometheus. Vigilante, we saw very briefly in The Flash, was it? Or was it an Arrow? I can't remember now. It's all blurring together.
That was Flash.
That was Flash, because Flash rescued, well, he grabs Diggle and Ollie, and, right? Because with Vigilante.
He could have ended that entire storyline by knocking Vigilante out instead of pulling those guys out of there. Would have been very different.
Yes. Yeah, Barry doesn't have high critical thinking skills.
Well, remember what we've learned about Barry lately. He just screws everything up. That's his current MO. I mean, there were moments in there in every one of the three main crossover episodes where you're just like, damn it, Barry.
You could have fixed this.
You could have fixed this a lot. Let's see. Am I missing anything else from Arrow that we need to touch on? It's all blurring together. That's my problem right now.
I think it was a really good episode. And one of my favorite bits is when it got a bit more crossovery right at the end as well, when they were on the Wave Rider and kind of geeking out about being in space. I think that was just a great place to kind of end the episode.
I was hoping Cisco would geek out more over Gideon eventually. And I know we're getting into Legends territory there, but I was hoping.
I was a little disappointed that the Nerd Army was surprised the aliens took them to space. Like, Felicity was like, oh, they're in space. It's like, lady, you're dealing with aliens.
I'm with you on that one. Like, yeah, the kind of where they should be, so.
But the alt-reality part, like, I was crying with, you know, Oliver saying goodbye to his parents, and then Thea, and then Sarah and Oliver saying goodbye to Laurel, and, heart ripped out in a good way.
As Ollie said, I think, in Tonight to Sarah, maybe it was a gift. You know, they look at it differently. It's all about perspective. They got to say their goodbyes.
Yeah, their chance to say farewell to everything and kind of close that chapter. So maybe they don't have to have as many lingering issues with what's gone on. Or maybe it's just wishful thinking. I don't know. A little from column A, a little from column B. I don't know. I think that does wrap us up on Flash and Arrow. I guess we should talk a little bit about Legends. As we record this, Legends has been off the air for a little over an hour. So it's kind of fresh in our minds. And I'm sure we're still geeking out a little bit. So bear with us as we nerd out.
Stein's kid, the new recurring character, I'm down with that. I thought he was, you know, he was leaning towards rescrewing or resetting the timeline, but good on you, Stein. You're doing the right thing.
And here's the thing. He can't now because, okay, so for those of you who are not doing with Legends, brief thing, Stein went back in the 80s and he talked to his younger self and gave him a lecture about how he needs to appreciate his wife and make sure that marriage stays. Well, that lecture really took because Barry erased people and kill people, Stein, by time travel, gave himself a daughter.
May I?
Yes.
Bow chicka wow wow.
Oh, I have one for that. There you go, Neil. That's just for you.
Thank you.
Now, in this episode, his daughter is vital in helping them defeat the Dominators. So if he goes back to erase his daughter, he interferes with the crossover because she helped with the crossover. So he would be creating another aberration because the Dominators could still be around. And welcome to Legends of Tomorrow, everybody.
My brain hurts. This is like an episode of Star Trek right now where we're in temporal paradoxes out the wazoo, and my brain is killing me.
I hate time travel.
I love it, but I hate it, if that makes sense.
So basically, Stein, you're a daddy. You're going to have to live with it now.
So we should probably power through Legends because we are running late already because we've been geeking out so much. But how cool was that epic beatdown at the end of everyone versus, well, most everyone who appeared in this episode versus the Dominators? Because we didn't have like Thea, like Michelle had pointed out earlier, and some of our heroes just kind of disappeared so that the Legends could appear.
This is what I wanted. The massive superhero versus aliens, everybody offloading all the weaponry, all the tech, all the superpowers. Just like, oh yeah, this is the payoff. If Big Papa was saying there was no payoff to the crossover, this was the payoff.
Okay, here's the thing. I am not comparing this to the comic before anybody accuses me of that. So here we go. Like, they go back in time, and I was thinking that they would have done a nice time, you know, battle and then made, you know, things that way, but they didn't. And so they get captured, and there's this whole government thing and blah, blah, blah. It's just, we don't find out literally till like 30 minutes left in the crossover what the Dominator's doing, right? And yes, it was fun and it was spectacle. But if we just take these four knights and we replace the Dominators with an army of speedsters or something, like, we still get the team up and we still get a battle, right?
Yeah, it didn't have to be the Dominators.
No.
Okay, that, from a story standpoint, this is where this is coming from. It didn't need to be the Dominators. It was just such an, they were not developed as at all. It was just, to me, they were like, we're going to do aliens just because we can't. It wasn't really outgrown. Because like right now on Flash, he's going to be up against this speed god or whatever. And it's like, for me, this happened too early in the year. I think it didn't grow out of anything. It was just all of a sudden, we have aliens. And yes, it was cool. It was super cool. I love the fight. I love the spectacle. All that. Neil, you are right on with that. But then there's a little asterisk for me.
Well, we are going to get more Dominators. We're going to get Dominators on Supergirl later this season, apparently. So they've got the CGI. They're not going to retire it at this point, apparently. So that
they can just reuse it. Just flip it 180 degrees. You'll be okay.
No, that's going to be awesome. You're right. I say I haven't read the Invasion comic. I've made it through maybe about 20%. I think one of the great things about the Invasion event was all the different alien species that were working with the Dominators as well that brought something else to the alien coalition. That was totally absent from this, and it would have felt maybe a bit too Supergirly if they had gone there. But yeah, they could have done a lot more. But then again, it was pretty crammed with the three episodes plus lead-in in Supergirl. I'm not sure they had the bandwidth to develop the Dominators more, especially with episode 100 of Arrow.
And if they're going to reuse them some, I don't know that you had to develop them as much if you have them come back in some way, shape, or form. I don't know. Maybe it's just because it's so fresh in my mind, the spectacle of it, I'm not seeing as much of the negative, and I probably will later when I can stop and digest it.
Yeah, because here's the thing, like, they were invading the entire world and our group is right there. You had an entire episode of Arrow, which was that alt reality. So a lot of the action against the Dominators took off screen. And again, like in the comic, there's literally hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of superheroes. They even bring out supervillains in order to fight. It's a much bigger spectacle. than what we got, because it was like, again, all these aliens, and then you have all these supers and metas on Earth, and so it made sense. But here we've got 15, 20 heroes. It's just imbalanced for me.
Fair enough. Let's wrap up some of the Legends talk, because like I said, we are running out of time. There's some really fun moments in this one. You look like the Star Spangled Idiot. Mick gets all the good one-liners in here. She's hot, talking about the new president. Mick got all the good lines, I'll be honest.
I think that the Barry and Ollie drinking at the end, kind of debriefing and talking about their friendship, I would love an entire spin-off series of those guys hanging out. I was telling a buddy of mine how I really want hard-traveling heroes, and I was like, that's why we need Green Lantern in this, but damn, we could have Barry and Ollie doing a hard-traveling heroes in the off-season. They have the friendship, and it would hold up on a character-driven story like that. So, just a lot of good stuff in Legends this week.
So, as we put a pin in the crossover itself, we did talk about, we got a rank amongst ourselves, or our individual rankings of the crossover episodes. Put them in order of your least favorite, or your most favorite to least favorite from this crossover, if you can do it. It's tough. I don't know. I think I have a three-way tie for first, and then a definite last place.
So we're including all four, right?
We will include all four. We'll go with the marketing propaganda that says it was a four-show crossover.
It was, damn it.
No, it was an extended cameo and then a three-show crossover. Look, when you reuse the same footage of your crossover element in Flash... All right, that's neither here nor there. We got to rank these things so then we can move on. So,
all right, I'm going to go for it. My favorite episode was Legends. I think it was fantastic. My next favorite, because of the hero-on-hero action, was Flash, followed by the Matrix episode of Arrow, followed by Supergirl.
All right, so if I've got to rank mine real quick off the top of my head, it's going to be it's going to be Legends, Arrow, Flash, Supergirl.
For me, Arrow, Legends, Flash, Supergirl, but yeah.
Yeah, it's real tough to rank Legends right now in my head. It's the same thing when I go see a movie. I try not to assign a score to it immediately, because generally when it's fresh in my head, I'm still geeking out over it. I have a hard time seeing the negatives as much as, oh my God, that was so cool, and that was cool, and that was cool. Oh my God, did you see this? So it's very tough for me to rank Legends, and ask me next week, and those rankings might have shuffled around a little bit as I've had some time to digest this.
I, for one, am going to rewatch a few of these on the PVR in the next week or so if I have time. So
I'll watch them on the CW app again myself, because I think I deleted them all. I can't remember. But any final thoughts on the crossover before we jump over into some little Easter eggs here?
I would like for them to do a four-show crossover next year, but to take their time with it and make sure it grows organically, instead of picking some random crossover event that happened in a comic book. You know, like, we keep talking about Crisis, but only do Crisis if it makes sense, if you're going to do something with it. Just have it grow organically. But I do want to see some more of this.
Okay, I'm calling it now. Next year's crossover, a proper Legion of Doom with the floating head base in the middle of the swamp, with Solomon Grundy and Grodd and Lex and everybody. That is our villain. That is our crossover next year.
Now, I will say real quick, I think they've set it up to do some smaller crossovers here and there, because remember, Cisco made it a point to give Kara a device that would allow her to jump back and forth between, what is she, Earth 32, I think it is, and Earth 1 in this case, plus communication tools. So we could see some interesting crossovers where Kara needs help in National City at some point, or someone needs help here from Supergirl, and you might get cross shows, not necessarily cross universe.
Or if she's really busy, she could give it to her cousin Superman.
Or she could give it to Superman.
Or Martian Manhunter. Martian Manhunter. Martian Manhunter's cured. He could come over.
There's all sorts of things they could do. There's all sorts of crazy things that are going to happen, I'm sure, going forward. But we're putting a pin in the crossover. We're going to go and talk specifically about Arrow. Let's talk about some of the cool Easter eggs we got this time around. Michelle, why don't you kick us off?
Stephen Amell said, the 100th episode of Arrow begins in a very appropriate way. It begins with Oliver running. We've had him running into the premiere almost every year. We didn't have him running in this year, but we have him running in the 100th episode.
He just loves to run, that guy. He really does.
Chris, I think you have to take the next one, buddy.
I guess I'll take the next one, guys. We're going to talk about my favorite character of all time, Dinah Laurel Lance. Full naming your fiance while doing cutesy talk is entirely unheard of, but here's a nice little reminder that Laurel is actually Dinah Lance, who from the comics is the Black Canary, a member of the Justice League, a member of the Birds of Prey. Oh, one other cool additional Easter egg. Her necklace is the Black Canary logo from the comics.
There was another recurring call out from an Easter egg referring to Oliver and Company, in case you missed it. This is a Disney animated film from the 80s, a musical comedy about a group of streetwise dogs who take in a small orange cat, in which the soundtrack was primarily driven by Billy Joel, whose biggest fan is probably Arrow executive producer Mark Guggenheim. So per Guggenheim, he made the Oliver and Company joke in the script, but it was actor Carlos Valdez who added the Billy Joel nod.
I like it.
The hosen. In the pilot, Oliver gave Thea a hosen, an arrow-shaped stone he found around the neck of a dead Japanese soldier on Leon Yu. In the pilot, he told her, as she tells him this week, that in Japanese Buddhism, the hosen symbolizes reconnecting.
That was cool. And I missed that one. Next one, Palmer's buyout offer. Palmer Technologies is offering to buy out Queen Consolidated. It did happen in season 3 of the TV show, but apparently here, Ray Palmer's hovering around Queen as soon as he heard that he's thinking of stepping down to become the mayor.
We get a call out to Van Horn Industries. So Van Horn Industries is the name of a company owned by the family of Andrew Van Horn, a superhero known as Gunfire in the DC Universe. Gunfire was created during the Bloodlines attack, a 90s attempt to create a bunch of new superheroes by giving them a common starting point. An alien invasion where some of the victims of parasitic, cannibalistic aliens survived and gained powers.
Hood Sketch. Along with Diggle Under the Hood, we get a look at the original Hood Sketch and newspaper clippings that made up part of the Starling City Police Department's Rip Hunter-style chalkboard looking for the Arrow in Season 1.
My name is Oliver Queen. We all know that's how Oliver introduces himself. When he starts to introduce himself, he goes with the famous line of, "My name is Oliver Queen," just like he does in the voiceover at the beginning of almost every episode, where Felicity hilariously cuts him off with, "Everyone knows who you are," which kind of serves the story here that he's a famous wealthy socialite or a billionaire philanthropist playboy, if you want to go with that terminology as well.
The next Easter egg was actually one of my favorites.
Me too.
So in the episode, they talked about how Tommy wasn't there, and basically it was something like the fact of, well, can you believe he's a doctor in Chicago now, and he couldn't just break away from his long shifts to come to the wedding? Well, this is a lot of meta, because in the real world, actor Colin Donnell, who played Tommy Merlin in season 1, is actually starring on a show called Chicago Med in production, and he couldn't spare the time to come away for the show. And of course, in Chicago Med, he plays a doctor.
The Path Not Taken, we touched on this briefly about how this is like last year's Supergirl episode for the girl who has everything, Flashpoint, and of course, pretends to dream from Batman, the animated series. And we also talked about the Fern coming back.
We did. One thing I should have brought up when we did the My Name is Oliver Queen bit, they're talking about the intro to the show. Did anyone notice in the intro that they basically took all of the different animated Arrowheads and put them on there for the Arrow intro? You start with the season 1, season 2, the badass cool Arrowhead, and you got all 5 of them as they kind of blurred together. I just thought that was kind of cool for an episode 100 moment.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty great. So, news. Each week we try and highlight some of the cool stories that come about Arrow, the DC Comics universe, the DC TV universe. We've gone super long because we had to talk about 4 episodes worth of content. So we're going to burn through some of this news real quick. Neil, why don't you kick us off with some news about Arrow and Prometheus?
Yeah, so if you saw any of the previews or you've seen any of the articles on social media or on the internet, you'll know that next week is a Prometheus-heavy episode. There's an explosive confrontation. We've got production stills, and of course, if you've seen the trailers, it's going to be a doozy. Really Prometheus-heavy. And a little Artemis revelation is sure to come next week.
Most certainly. So next up, I'm going to talk to you guys about ratings real quick. Arrow hit a season high in ratings during the 100th episode. Deadline reports and confirmed that Arrow hit a season high rating last night of a 1.3/5. The episode drew in 86% more viewers ages 18 to 49 than it did on November 16th. The episode, however, was a 10th down from last year's superhero crossover special, but its viewership was still impressive. More than 3.52 million people who watched the episode, Now we can wait for the DVR ratings to come in, and then probably some numbers off the app, and you'll probably see some pretty sizable viewing numbers. And since we are talking about episode 100, Neil, oh, we dropped that one off. Never mind. And we'll move on to our general DC movie news or TV news. Real quick, we did touch on it earlier. The Dominators are set for their post-crossover appearance. They will be on Supergirl coming up. We don't need to give any more details or to say that's what's going to be going on. But Michelle, there's some other awesome people coming to The Flash. We have to touch on this. It has to be done.
Mark Hamill, John Wesley Shipp return in new photos. In the present next week's episode of The Flash, Barry Allen will pay a little visit to Jay Garrick. And that means crossing over into Earth 3. New photos from the episode reveal a first look at Jay's world, as well as Earth 3's version of James Jesse, better known as the Trickster. So we get Mark Hamill and John Wesley Shipp.
Ooh, fantastic. So we talked Arrow ratings. Let's talk ratings for the other two shows. I'll start first with Supergirl's ratings. They were also up as the crossover begins because a lot of people watched Supergirl because it was billed as a four-show crossover. DC Comics television crossover got off to a solid start with this week's episode of Supergirl titled Medusa. It scored a solid 1.1 rating in the core 18 to 49 demographic, was watched by 3.51 million viewers in total. That is an uptick from last week's episode of Supergirl that puts the ratings for Medusa on par with the second season premiere. So a solid showing for Supergirl. Michelle, how did Flash do?
Oh, let's see. Flash hit season high ratings thanks to Arrowverse crossover. When the second installment of Invasion arrived on Flash, 4.09 million viewers tuned in to see it, making it the show's most watched episode since season one's The Man in the Yellow Suit, which aired on December 9th, 2014. Invasion achieved a 1.25 rating in the adults 18 to 34 demographic and a 1.55 in adults 18 to 49, something the show hasn't done since last season. So this helped everybody, and it probably will help Legends.
Definitely. And Chris, I think this answers a question. You said we're not sure if we're going to see something this epic. I think we are going to keep seeing things this epic because of those ratings. It works. It's just like crossover events in comics. It brings in the readers. It brings in the viewers.
I would like to think so. It's just, this is so hard for them to pull off by all accounts that if you do it more than once a season, I think you're going to burn a lot of people out. And I will also say from my podcaster standpoint, this is really tough to do. Four nights in a row of DC TV shows and then try and cram four shows worth of content into an hour and a half. It's insane.
I think we're doing pretty good. I think it should be one big crossover and then maybe like a smaller thing.
There you go.
You know, like, yeah. But I think one big one, just like back in the olden days where you'd have like the one big summer event, that sort of deal, like just that's it.
So I had one last news story I wanted to bring up. SP's not here, but we do know he loves to talk about Constantine and kind of twist that knife a little bit when he gets the chance that Constantine got canceled. So Matt Ryan had a special message for Constantine fans. He appeared at the Heroes and Villains Fan Fest alongside several other actors from Arrow and Flash. ComicBook.com did an interview with him, and they asked him about his potential future for the role of Constantine, in which he said, "Never say never, right? It was the best he could offer, not knowing whether or not fans would actually expect to see him in the show." He did have a message, though, for the fans. He said, "I'd like to say thank you, fans, for all the support you've given me from playing this character. It's such an iconic role, and to have you guys support me is just a fantastic thing. So thank you very, very much. Bring back Constantine. Do it. Hashtag bring back Constantine. Do it. Do it."
So say we all.
Next year's crossover. They're going to go to get Constantine from hell.
That would work.
Yeah, see?
They just need to bring back Constantine in any way, shape, or form. You could have brought him over for this.
Well, he's still in the comics, Michelle. He's still in the comics.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And speaking of comics, guys, we have a tiny bit of comics news. See what I did there, guys? Arrow showrunner Mark Guggenheim is actually going to be helming a new comic book, but this time Mr. Guggenheim is going to be the one crossing the streams. Guggenheim is stepping over to Marvel to write the new Gold and Blue rosters and creative team on the X-Men. So in the story that he's writing, Kitty Pryde at long last will become an X-Men team leader, and the squad's going to include Storm, Colossus, Nightcrawler, Old Man Logan, and Rachel Gray. And, you know, Guggenheim says that Kitty is the right person to bring the X-Men into the future to herald a new era of the X-Men. So it sounds like a really cool story. If you're a Guggenheim fan, you're an X-Men fan, or just looking to check out what's going on in the Marvel side of the universe, go check it out and support one of the showrunners.
Indeed. So as we start to wrap things up, we did have some feedback. Let's start from the YouTube side of the house, where on our last episode, Youssef Waleed had chimed in and said, "This is the first time I found this podcast, but I want to say what a great name for an Arrow podcast." So thank you. We do like that name. As Neil had mentioned, we've considered updating it for Star City, but we're sticking with the classics. And we also do own StarCityTribune.com. So please feel free to go there if you need to try and find the podcast as well. ILXO84 had said, "Kovar didn't kill Oliver because of the deal he has with the Bratva. Bratva doesn't want Oliver dead yet. They said so in the episode."
And YouTube watcher Aubrey James said, "I just want those famous words, 'I will break you.'" To which Michelle said,
"Me too."
And then finally, ILXO84 chimed in again and said, "And regarding Artemis, she is kind of shady and villainy in the comics, so it's not that surprising. It is actually cool that they're following the source material for once." So thank you to everyone who did watch on the YouTube side of things. It's pretty cool to get some YouTube comments there and see that people are watching. But hey, that's not the only place people were chiming in. If you guys didn't know, Michelle generally live tweets the episodes of Arrow, sometimes Flash, and all the other things from the Starling Tribune Twitter account that you can find at Starling Tribune. We got some pretty interesting feedback on Twitter, didn't we, Michelle?
Yes. Darren Rosu at Darkstar Darren. We had an exchange. He asked me about, he just out there said about Firestorm does have his transmutation powers. I replied, it's like, yes, near the end of last season. Replied back, "Oh, cool. Just sort of concerned they were making him Human Torch." So, nope, actually getting stuff from the comics. And then also Jonathan Varsana at JohnBar123. Again, spinoff talk, tech support starring Felicity and Cisco. I replied, "And when?" And then he replied, "Oh, and Curtis and maybe Catelyn." And I just went, "And Stein's daughter. Now we have a team."
That'd be awesome.
I love it. So again, thank you to everyone who's been chiming in on the social media and giving us comments. We love seeing feedback and comments from you guys, so keep those coming in. We'll try and read as many of those as we can on the next episode we air. So we are getting ready to wrap things up, but before we do that, I did want to remind folks that the Starling Tribune, it is part of a network of podcasts that you can find over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. We've got a variety of geeky, awesome content. It's a network that's continually growing. And each week we try to highlight one specific episode on the network. And this week we want to talk about our newest member of the network, the Doom Ninja podcast, episode 18, Hornography. This week, Nate gives the lowdown on Happy Wars. Ryan explains all about Assault Android Cactus and how it has nothing to do with desert plants. And Ryan starts beef with fellow Gunna Geek podcaster Cody Goff by calling him a monster. Ryan also talks about an upcoming new character addition to his game in development, Suburban Scavengers. Nate then lets us know if he's picking up the pieces of his lost game, Glimpse. So if you are a fan of video games and want to get some insight into gamers making games and gamers playing games, go check out the Doom Ninja podcast over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
You have to say it like SP, GunnaGeek.com.
GunnaGeek.com. No.
Yeah.
No. Sorry, I
failed. We miss you, SP.
We miss you, SP. Come back, SP.
We would like to thank everyone who listens to the podcast, whether it's live, whether it's downloaded in your car, at your office, wherever. Thank you very much. If you're listening to Spreaker, iTunes, watching this on YouTube, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Don't forget, you can join in live every Sunday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern over on Geeks.live. A big thank you to everyone that I have seen tune in live tonight. I know I saw
Thursday.
Did I say Tuesday?
Not Sunday, Mr. ATGN.
I didn't even know I said it. I'm sorry. Hell. Yeah, I meant to say Thursday. I'm just self-promoting without realizing it, guys. Yeah, every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern over on Geeks.live. Son of a gun. And don't forget, you can catch the replays of the podcast over on YouTube at youtube.com/GunnaGeek.
You can watch the next live show on the Gunna Geek Network over on Geeks.live. The next live show on the network is Better Podcasting, Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. And please don't forget to rate, view, and subscribe. We appreciate all those reviews on iTunes. Like us on Facebook. Thank you to those who have gone over to the page. We got some more likes. Thank you very much. All the YouTube comments, we appreciate that. And of course, badger me on Twitter at Starling Tribune.
Great. And you can find all of our contact information on the Gunna Geek Network over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com, where you can check out the forums and all of our other shows. If you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or you can actually call us on our voicemail line. You can leave us a message at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283, and we'll be sure to play it on the show. Guys, those were four great episodes. Three in a bit, if you believe Chris. But that about wraps it up for another week. Any last words before we sign off and open up the Geeks.live chat to our live listeners? At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag three in a bit.
At Michelle Ely.
Hashtag best fight ever.
And I am at Neil Isn't Witty, signing off with hashtag invasion. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.